You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
But could you pay me in advance?
Are you serious?
It would be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Wolfman's got nerves!
Make love in a hammock!
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 116 for the 22nd of January, 2011. I am Dave McVeigh, and I am still joined by a very sick Josh Wilcox.
I am still here, and you can't get rid of me. You can't silence me with your germ warfare. I'm still...
For those who don't listen to the Geek Actually podcast, you haven't heard that Josh is very sick, and we're trying to keep him on task because he's easily distracted. He's kind of like a magpie with shiny things right now.
I'm just mildly delirious. I think is probably the best way to put it.
Well, and considering the film we're reviewing, it's probably a good thing.
Oh, man, yeah. Dude, seriously, I have to say, in probably the last 6 months, I haven't been this excited to talk about a film.
Fantastic. So, oh, well, we've actually got two films.
Oh, so, yeah, not that one.
All right, so this is Film Actually, and this is the official movie podcast of the Geek Action Network. This week, we have two film reviews for you this week because we're still playing catch-up. We've got The Green Hornet in 3D and Black Swan. We're also going to take a little look at some news in our entertainment buzz section, and we deliver another listener. No, we don't. I take that back completely. The notes say another listener requested. I didn't take that out. It's not listener requested at all. This is one of ours. We have a new list of five. Our list of five movies is in relation to one of the films we're reviewing, is five movies about insanity. But first, as we have started for the last couple of weeks, because it was so much fun, I thought we would do it again. Which, Josh, what have you been watching this week?
I have been freaking massacring films this week. I'm quite impressed with myself. I'm not sure whether it's a lead-in to the fact that I am getting sick, but I did all three Scanners films back-to-back.
Oh, good Lord.
Which is kind of fun because the whole thing
punishment.
Is, by number two, I had kind of given up on the concept that I was going to get decent films, so I was actually just looking at it for its parts. And the cool thing about Scanners is the fact that they can do awesome things like blow up people's heads. So two and three have really good levels of destruction towards people and things around them. So, look, they're really bad films, but they've got some cool stuff in them. So that was that. I watched that. Did Pet Sematary again.
I quite like Pet Sematary. It's a cheesy film, but I quite liked it.
I actually think that for a Stephen King film, I actually thought that it actually is one of the ones that adapts really well. Like, it's not... The only thing that doesn't do it for me is the kid's far too cute to be evil. Like,
although he looks pretty evil later in the film, though.
Oh, dude, that bit where he's nomming on the dude's neck, it's not at all violent. You're just looking at it going, oh, he's giving him a blow kiss. It's like, there's no way this kid could be doing damage to anyone. Still, kind of cool film. I dig that one. And we watched something else. We did Soylent Green, which I've never seen before. And I've decided to create a drinking game, which I will be doing at my house sometime soon, which was Charles Bronson drinking games. Anytime Charles Bronson hits a chick, punches a dude...
Charles Bronson, you mean Charlton Heston.
Charlton Heston, my God. I did that same thing last time we were talking.
Yeah, but this time I'm going to give you credit for it because you're sick.
Yeah. I was still sick that time as well. That was like a day ago. That was when it started. Charlton Heston is what I meant. So anytime Charlton Heston whacks someone or hits a chick or sleazes onto someone, he's almost as bad as, not Timothy Dalton, the other Bond guy, Roger Moore. When Roger Moore hits on people, it's that gross. It's that level of gross because Charlton...
I still say the person who hits on people the best is Steve McQueen, though.
Because you really think that he might have hit someone.
That's right.
Stage.
I think Steve McQueen really actually did belt people. But that's a whole different issue. Anything else?
I think there is. I've been doing Supernatural again because I want to get through the whole series. Mm-hmm. Again, because I want to do season 4 and 5. because apparently they become very good. Like, it's funny because in the same way that horror has as a genre, it's like it starts out very slapstick and very obviously camp at times, and sort of from three onwards they started to give writers decent storylines and it kind of excels further along. Like, it's still for chicks and it's still relatively I'm sorry, okay, the horror aspect has become kind of the smallest part of it and it is very drama-esque now, but look, when it gets violent,
the 90210 of horror, you reckon?
Yeah, but it, like, when it's violent it works, so you know, good on them.
Fair enough. You know, James from Melbourne has asked us in our chat room, and just to remind people, we do go out live and we have a chat room, so you'll hear us talking to our chat room. James from Melbourne in our chat room wants to know if we're watching Clone Wars.
He sent me an email recently about Clone Wars. No, dude, I'm not actually a super fan of it, but it is a kids show, so as a kids show, I think it's actually...
I actually have to say, I've been watching Clone Wars, and...
But, like, I've always been a fan of those weird, esoteric kind
of... No, this is the new one, the CG one, the CG Clone Wars.
I haven't seen
this
that.
This is in season 3, I think.
I haven't seen
that. I've been watching Clone Wars, I actually am really enjoying Clone Wars at the moment. The first season was a little bit rough off the mark, and it was kind of like, oh, really? Why are we doing this? Why are we bothering? But it's actually gotten really good, and it's much more Star Wars-esque than the prequel trilogy is. So I'm actually quite enjoying it. I quite enjoy the fact that they get into the minds of the clone soldiers and stuff like that. So, and the CG is really good. The CG is really good, in fact. I just actually read something last night. It's not in our show notes, but I'll bring it up anyway, just since Clone Wars has been brought up. Apparently, Liam Neeson is coming back. On the 28th of January starts a 3-episode arc of Clone Wars where he's voicing Qui-Gon Jinn again in Visions.
Oh, wow.
So I never thought he would return because apparently he had not such a great experience
making
the first one, but apparently he's quite keen to come back and do it again. So,
well, he probably has quite a fan base from it.
James Miller says he has a really big lightsaber. Yes, I've heard that rumor too. For those who don't know, there is a rumor circulating in Hollywood that Liam Neeson has one of the biggest dicks in Hollywood.
Well, there you go.
I don't know who ever started this. I don't know if it's ever been substantiated, but apparently he's hung down to his knees. So anyway, but that is an allegation and I have no proof either way. And I am not neither denying or confirming that rumor. Okay, what have I been watching? I'm continuing on my little mission that I've started. And yes, if you want to follow me on Tumblr, I mentioned this last week. It's now completely up to date. I finally got it all up to date, every film that I've watched this year so far. This week so far, when did this week start? I can't remember when this week started now. I've watched, let's see, I'm still going through all of the Coen Brothers films. I did the Hudsucker Proxy. Oh, hello, my iPad just decided to turn itself off. I've done the Hudsucker Proxy, the Lady Killers. 17th, we saw Green Hornet on Monday, so there you go. Clerks 2, I watched. I've actually now finished watching all of Kevin Smith's films, so I can move on from there. I watched an amazing made-from-TV movie the other night, and in fact, so amazing that my lovely wife, Katie, and my son both got hooked on it as well. It was quite possibly the funniest movie I've seen in a long time, which was Sharktopus. It was a made-for-sci-fi channel cheesy shit movie, but it's not Asylum. It was actually produced by Roger Corman, who knew? I didn't even know he was still alive. But basically, it's about a half shark, half octopus, and I'll let your mind reel on that one for a while. And they even managed to get Eric Roberts to be in it, and he really tries to act, I tell you. I also watched Brainstorm, and once again, if you go to davidmcveigh.tumblr.com, you can keep track of everything I'm watching throughout the week. Try Megalodon. That's really bad. I've seen it. So have you. Shark Attack 3. We've seen that.
It's right up there in my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, and last night I actually started to watch Mega Shark versus Crocosaur. So that was
There you go.
So that was pretty awesome as well. That's an Asylum one though, and it's nowhere near as fun. I've been the other film I thought I'd mention very quickly is I rewatched yesterday Brainstorm, which I really enjoyed watching again. It's a bit of a mess in the sense that Natalie Wood died while making it, so they had to kind of, you know, fill in her role and stuff like that. But it's some really interesting concepts behind it. If you haven't seen it, it's basically Christopher Walken and Louise Fletcher play scientists who create a device that can record your brain, basically. And so the idea is to give you new sensations. This is kind of pre-IMAX days. And then they start to realize that they can also do things like record thoughts. and then play back people's thoughts. And course, somebody makes a sex tape. Of course they do, because you get all sensations. So you get all feeling. And of course, the film really leads to its inevitable middle act, which is where Louise Fletcher dies of a fatal heart attack. And as one last moment of being a scientist, throws the helmet on and records her death.
Yeah.
And of course, Christopher Walken is now obsessed by seeing that tape to see what she experienced at the moment.
Does it have a good ending? Because movies like that, it's so important.
It gets a little airy-fairy in the ending. It's a little bit spiritual and all this sort of stuff. Visually amazing. I mean, it's directed by Douglas Trumbull, who's a special effects god. He, for those who don't know, did the effects work for Blade Runner 2001, Close Encounters. I mean, this guy's been, he's a legend in the special effects world. This was his second film as a director. I don't actually know if he's ever directed another film since. I haven't looked him up. But his first film as a director was Silent Running with Bruce Dern, which was actually a really good film. And this was his second film in 1983. And it's really an experiment in visuals. The ending gets a little bit spiritual, a little bit airy-fairy, but visually really wonderful to look at and raises some very interesting concepts is what it raises. And I was watching it, and it really occurred to me that this is kind of the Godfather. This is kind of the... this is kind of the godfather of all those films to come after it. Things like, you know, Inception and Strange Days, the Catherine Bigelow film, the whole idea of, you know, getting into people's heads, you know?
Yeah.
So it is worth having a look at. Unfortunately, the video, the DVD edition we have in this country is a bit shaky.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even 16:9 enhanced, which is a bit shitty. But I'm waiting for a Blu-ray of it. I'd like to see it on Blu-ray. It'd look really good. Anyway, so that's what I've been doing. And if you want to, as I say, you want to follow me on Tumblr. And Josh, you've got a Tumblr as well, yeah?
Yes, but it won't be filled out for a while because I'm sick.
Both of those links, by the way, are on the Follow Us tab. Yeah. So if you go there, both Josh and my Tumblrs. Josh and I, Tumblr, whatever. They're both there.
Tumblrs.
Along with our Facebook and our Twitter.
Just go to the website.
Yeah, just go to the website. Go to geekactually.com. All is explained on geekactually.com.
Everything.
Everything.
Everything you care about.
The other thing we were going to do this week, because we haven't done it for the last few weeks, and I thought we were really kind of falling behind, and this week we got so much of it that we're doing feedback.
Yeah.
And Geek Actually, we did the Geek Actually feedback. And so in Film Actually, I thought we should do our Film Actually feedback. Just a reminder that we do read all feedback that comes in. So sometimes we don't get a chance to read it on the show, but we do read it also, and we do really encourage you to send feedback at feedback@geekactually.com. Now, first one I've got here is from James at Melbourne. James from Melbourne, who's in our chat room at the moment, and he says, "Hey Dave, just watched this awesome documentary called Video Nasties." Sounds like it's right up our alley.
Yep.
It's English and all about movie censorship during the 80s. It even showed some young ones clips. Classic, anyway, great show last week. Keep them coming. So we will have to look
we'll
that
have
one
to look
up.
That up.
We've got
to
find that one. Thank you very much, James. We're going to look at that and see if we can find a copy of that around. Now, Rachel Atkinson from Funky Films on Radio Fremantle sent us an email and said that she went to see True Grit on the weekend. We didn't get to that preview. I wish we had. But we're going to do True Grit next week, by the way, with a guest. So bear with us on that one. She says, "As far as I can see, it might be the Coen Brothers' best film so far." Well, actually, second, her favorite being Fargo. She goes, "So I was thinking, if you get to see it, maybe you'd be able to do Best Westerns as your top five."
Oh, whoa.
Yeah, maybe. We could wait to see if we could do that one.
Jesus.
She says she hasn't seen enough Westerns to contribute five films. I have.
Maybe we should do that for her.
Maybe. And she says, "But I have rewatched The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford for like the millionth time on the weekend," which is funny because I haven't seen that film.
I have.
So there you go.
You should watch it.
I should watch it. And I bought the album online and I've been listening to it all weekend, so it must have a good soundtrack too. So that would be my number one.
Yeah.
And that's it. No. She goes, "Don't know if this would be, don't know if there would be blood counts as Westerns. Don't know if there, oh, if there would be blood counts as a Western." It's kind of
Western
the right,
shot,
right period, but it's not really a Western in the genre. But she's, but love that too. And she says Russell Crowe's version of 310 to Yuma. She really liked, which another film I haven't seen.
Aww.
So, but that one is actually on my Quick Flicks queue. It should be next up. So I should have that this week. So anyway, just a thought. And she says, "I hope you get to see True Grit. It's her first 5-star movie of the year."
Well, there you go.
And she said she did listen to our King's Speech review, and her and Lewis, her co-host, both had it in their top films of last year. She goes, "It's amazing." Yes, we agree. Great film. All right, thank you very much, Rachel. We also have one from Jordan. Oh, no, I'll save that one because it's a very long one. We also have one from Geek Betty. Says she saw the King's Speech. This one. Oh, now, Josh, I've talked to Josh about this one already. We just thought we'd share this with you because this is great. She says she saw the King's Speech this weekend and, like you guys, thought it was damn near flawless.
Yep.
I generally don't rewatch movies, but I'm definitely planning on seeing it again. Mm-hmm. Then I listened to your review of Unstoppable, which you say is an ordinary filmmaking effort, but maybe okay DVD fodder.
Yeah.
Both films would cost me $18 or so to see at the cinema. I'll happily pay that again to see The King's Speech, but if I'd paid even once for Unstoppable, I know I'd be enraged as the credits rolled and thinking to myself, I paid $20 for that. She says, maybe it's time we introduced tiered pricing to movie tickets.
Yeah.
Studios could choose to back the quality of their film by grading it themselves. If they think it's good enough to attract premium price, they can take the chance and rate it AAA, or they can call it for what it is, rate it B and on the outset, and go for discount volume market. This might even entice film goers to watch the meh films at the cinema instead of waiting for DVD. Cheers, Betty. Now, I gotta say, I read that and I just went, genius!
Yeah. It's never gonna happen.
I also have to say, it will never happen, because no studio film in their right mind will ever admit that their film is anything but AAA. But what a concept.
Yeah, no, dude, I have to agree with her, man.
And James from Melbourne says, yeah, damn right, if you ordered a meal and it was junk food, should you pay prime rib prices? Absolutely. I mean, that's the concept, and that's the concept she's saying. It's a genius idea, and I think it would be brilliant. It's never going to happen.
Yeah,
I wish it would. But thank you very much.
It would, though, because it's such a good concept.
So good. Yeah. All right, now we also have one here. This is from... now, I want to make sure we give the right name out here, because I've got their real name here. But here we go. In the chat room, it's Zed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I don't think Zed is here with us today.
He was.
He might have left. Okay, and this is a long one, so bear with me. We're going to paraphrase this one down a little bit because there's a bunch of concepts in here.
Yeah.
Says, hi, Dave and Josh. I've been meaning to write for a while, like 2 months now, and I finally sat down and did it. I went to see Tangled for the second time on Saturday night. It was just as good the second time. I highly recommend it. Okay, well, we've been debating Tangled. But she got me thinking about a great list of five for you guys. Five children's movies you can't resist.
Ooh.
Now, what he says is, I'm thinking of movies for kids that you love watching as well. It doesn't particularly have to be young kids, just things like Aladdin or Finding Nemo or movies of that genre. They don't have to be animated either, say Three Ninjas. So basically what he's saying is movies that kids love, but you just can't stop yourself from watching them as well. I think it's a great idea for a list.
Absolutely.
And we'll put that on the back burner along with five Westerns. Westerns maybe next week.
Mm.
Says, I am a great follower, and so I did get to listen to your fantastic review of M. Night's The Last Airbender, which actually got me thinking about something else. I figured you might be able to do a five critically panned movies that you loved. Now, he explains. He says, not so bad it's good, but more like, I loved it, but no one else did.
Mm. I've got a bunch of those.
Yeah, me too. And he said, this one seems great to me because you guys have panned quite a few movies I enjoyed. His example, John Carpenter's Ghost of Mars. Look, dude, it's a completely subjective thing. Josh and I were just having a debate before coming up here because Josh doesn't like Minority Report, thinks it's a mess. I quite enjoy Minority Report. So James Melbourne says The Postman. I've got it on my list, by the way. Go have a look at my review. I watched it just a couple weeks ago. So I think that's also really interesting. He says in the last episode we brought this up because you said you preferred Jaws 2 and I preferred Jaws the original. So movies are a completely subjective thing. Yep. And this is a list like that might be interesting because we might be able to do a list like that and people go, oh yeah, I actually do like that film.
Mm.
And other people will go, oh, that film's crap. And they can kind of get in tune with us. But anyway, so that could be coming up too. So hold on to that. Some rather interesting ideas I had. He says, so how does Sean Marr sound for Bruce Banner in The Avengers? Well, I hate to inform you, but Bruce Banner's already been cast. It's
Sean Marr, though.
It's Mark Ruffalo is playing Bruce Banner in The Avengers. So I don't know if you had heard that or not, or if you're just throwing out another idea. Anyway, Little Geek does pretty well as a reviewer. I liked his last few reviews. Have you ever considered putting him on the Film Actually show?
Nice.
He's actually been on the show in the past. If you go back to early days of Geek Actually, we used to bring him in live into studio in like the last 10 minutes. Mm. The problem is that it gets a little bit hard sometimes to talk freely and openly when he's in the room because he doesn't, at his age, he still doesn't quite understand the finer points of criticism. And so when we start to bag out a film, we might actually be saying that we really like it, but these are some bad points. He immediately goes, oh, but you hate it. So it's, he hasn't quite worked out the nuances yet. So we like to do him on his separate show, which is why he... But yeah, every now and again, he might come in. You never know. Now it says here, have you ever considered doing retro reviews? Beverly Hills Cop or Airplane, etc. We have done a couple of retro reviews in the past.
Yeah.
When there is absolutely nothing at the cinema. We have to try and keep up with the new stuff, but if there is absolutely nothing coming out or there's nothing we want to do, then yeah, we have often thrown in a DVD review or a retro review. We did a retro review of Aliens for Natalie Del Conte. That's how we first met her, how we first started talking to her. He goes on, I'm paraphrasing, he says, have you suggested giving people homework? I really like this part. He says, have you suggested giving people homework, one movie every week that people should watch, say To Kill a Mockingbird 1 week and then Serenity the next? He says, then you could ask for people to send in their reviews of the movie of the week. And we could compare reviews, which I thought was actually kind of an interesting idea. I have
Delta brings up the fact that he already has homework.
Now, I have actually pondered the idea of doing like film festivals where we give you the list in advance of films that we're going to do over the course of like 5 weeks so that you can watch them all and be on track and get your opinions heard and stuff.
So
we have thought about that. We have pondered that in the past. So sorry this is going off so long. It's a very long email. I am paraphrasing it, Dan. It says, as feedback for Geek Actually, this is the other show. He says, and I'll just kind of paraphrase this. He basically, the biggest issue here is he says he likes it when it goes off onto a tangent and I have to try and bring it back, such as when Mirren or Katrina are on the show. Yeah, they're kind of fun. He says, on the most part, he's positive with the changes we just made. Thank you very much. And he does go on to say that he was worried about the length of the shows, but as it turns out, he didn't need to worry because we're doing that quite fine. And of course, he says that he's didn't mean to be too harsh on us about our comments about the temperature. It's just he's from Townsville and it's always hot. So that's our feedback for this week. Thank you very much. Send feedback to feedback@geekactually.com, or you can send voicemail to 028011. Oh crap! What's the number again? 3167. Is that it?
Sounds good.
I think that's it. We'll do this at the end of the show anyway. But 028011-3167. Yes, that's correct. Or Skype ID Geek Actually. So you can do it that way as well. Okay, so our feature film review for our first one, we're going to keep this one rather short, is, of course, The Green Hornet. Now, it's directed by Michel Gondry, and if that name is not a household name for you, he is best known probably for art house fare, such as... Be Kind Rewind and Eternal Sunshine on a Spotless Mind. And you're immediately going to say the same thing I am, which is, and he's directing Green Hornet, which is kind of an interesting choice. Written by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, and it stars Seth Rogen, Jay Cho, Cameron Diaz, Christoph Waltz, Tom Wilkinson, and Edward James Olmos. And here's the description from IMDb. How short could they make the description? Following the death of his father, Britt Reed, heir to his father's newspaper empire, teams up with his late dad's assistant, Cato, to become a mass crime-fighting team.
Yeah.
That's about it.
That's pretty much the whole film.
That's pretty much it. We do have a trailer. Let's have a look at the trailer real quick, and then we'll talk about this. Where is the trailer? Here we go.
There's a party going down at the Casa de Britt. Bring all your friends as long as
they are chicks.
Today's top story, newspaper mogul James Reed was found dead, leaving his son in charge of his media empire.
I'm Cato. I'm sorry to hear about your father.
Who is Cato?
He worked on your father's cars and made his coffee.
Beer?
Lay it on me, Cato.
You are full of little surprises.
Check this out.
You drew all these?
Want to see something cool?
Whoa! Think about this, Cato. I haven't done anything good my whole life. We've been wasting our potential. You a little bit more than me. This city needs our help. We could be heroes.
Okay. I'll need some weapons.
Yes, we will.
And armor. But no tights.
Good.
Are you ready to die?
I control the crime. I control the city.
Let's roll, Cato.
The Green Hornet
brand has been attracting a lot of attention.
Whoa!
Is it gas gun?
How come I'm the only one with a gun?
Because you don't have fighting experience.
How does it even work?
Do you work for Mr. Reed?
I'm his executive associate.
He's my man.
I'm not your man.
He's not my man. We're just platonic friends. Yes.
I want the head of the Green Hornet. I want it tonight.
Kato, we have a secret mission. Take my hand. Come with me on this adventure.
I'll go with you. But I don't want to touch you.
Be careful. I'll be careful. Okay? I just want to look at it. Just give it to me for 1 second and I'll just...
All right, so that's from the trailer of The Green Hornet. James from Melbourne has summed up something perfectly in our chat room. What is it, Josh? He said, what's amazing is that Seth Rogen has managed to yell every line for 2 hours. Give that man a lozenge.
Yep.
Who would you like to go first on this?
I don't know. I'm never a good person to start a film like this. Look, I have a problem of not really liking Seth Rogen's current style of jokes. I laugh when he delivers them, but it's the kind of laugh where it's sort of like, if anybody's with me, because I've been watching this recently, if you rewatch season 6 of Family Guy, it's like you laugh every now and then, but as a whole, it all falls flat because the jokes are just funny because the person's funny. They're not actually, they don't have any depth or ability to them. They're just somebody making funny noises or something like that. They're hollow. And I have a lot of problems with Seth Rogen in this film because of that. It's like 90% of the jokes are just funny because it is kind of a combination of everything from our generation's humor. It's joking about male sexuality. It's joking about, you know, sort of hanging out with your best buds and broing down. It's like we're stuck on that as a generation jokes-wise, and that's all we seem to do. And it's just literally like that because they know that's going to sell. And I feel that a lot about this film. It's like... you've got Jay Chou, who is a pop singer overseas, which is going to attract a market you wouldn't usually get into this film, so that's going to help boost money for it. You've got Seth Rogen doing just one kind of joke pretty much throughout the entire film, which will bring in all of that stoner crowd. It's like the whole film is just a producer's wet dream. Someone's sitting at home having a good old bat over this, because that's basically all it is. Outside that, when things aren't exploding, there's probably 1 out of 10 jokes hit solidly, and the rest of them are just stupid. There are some generally funny bits in this film, but as a whole, when it ended, I was like, that was such a mess. There just wasn't connecting features between these points to create a storyline. It was just running around doing chaos, and then at the end of it, it kind of finishes without ending. It's like, yeah, no, there was nothing to this film that I would say go see it to anyone I know, apart from the people that just want a good laugh.
Well, the interesting part is I just brought up Box Office Mojo on the screen here, and it's interesting because it cost $120 million to make.
Yeah.
And its domestic gross after its first week, so we're not even talking about first weekend, first week is only $45 million. Mm. So it's actually not doing the boffo, considering it's also 3D dollars.
Yeah.
It's not bringing in the business that I think they would probably be hoping for. It hasn't really opened everywhere internationally yet. It's opened only this, what is it, 2 days ago here in Australia. So foreign market, we've only got $15 million in so far. So all up, though, worldwide at this point, it's only taken $60 million after a week in release. That's not staggering for a $120 million film. It's not disaster, but it's not staggering.
Yeah.
So I would actually say they would have been hoping for a $45 million weekend, says James from Melbourne. Absolutely. Yeah. And $45 million in the first week is not the weekend.
No.
By now, they should be up to more than that. I mean, they should be.
I think realistically, by the time it probably closes, they could make their money back. But, you know.
Oh, and look, by the time this thing comes out on Blu-ray, DVD, gets a TV, and the film will make money. There's no doubt the film will make money. Look, I'm going to just say that I actually put up my first thoughts on the website already, if you want to go and read them. Basically, one of the biggest issues I had, like you, is that I am over Seth Rogen. I thought he was funny in The 40-Year-Old Virgin as a supporting character. I even didn't mind him in Knocked Up. But there were already shades in Knocked Up of what I'm going to say here.
Yeah.
Which is that the character of Britt Reid was supposed to start as an obnoxious, a spoilt brat, right? And through his adventures, through learning to fight the crime and stuff, he's supposed to become a hero. The problem is that he is just as much of an obnoxious brat in the last scene as he is in the first scene. So there's no voyage. There's no journey. There's no him becoming a hero, you know? He's just still an obnoxious brat. And so it completely fails on that front.
Exactly.
The film is, I mean, I don't hate the film. It was all right. And if, as I said in my wrap-up, it was a good film that you could have a few drinks with your buddies around the DVD player and watch it on DVD, that's fine, you know? But this is not a film that I'm going to go rushing out to go see at the cinema. If I hadn't seen an advanced screening, courtesy of Sony, thank you very much, Sony, if I hadn't seen an advanced screening, I would have really objected to the fact that I was paying 3D money. And on that point, the 3D is terrible. It's a post it's a post conversion job, and it's terrible. It's just as bad as the 3D in Last Airbender. And you just sit there and go, why bother with that? You know what I mean? It was such a calculated move.
Yeah.
I also had problems with supporting characters. I thought the best thing I thought the best thing in this film was Jay Chou.
I think the thing that really bothers me about it is the fact that that in itself is another thing that was trying to make money. And this is why I hate this film so much, because it's such a cash cow. Like, it is everything I hate about cinema in one film. It's like, the fact that they made it 3D means that they were like, what sells? 3D sells. Let's do this. Yeah. So it's like...
Well, and this was a troubled film. Yeah. Right? The history, we've joked about this film for over a year now. I kept saying this was a film that was never going to happen. Anybody who's been following Geek actually knows the running gags of this film. Stephen Chow was supposed to direct and star in it as Kato. Yeah. He pulled out as director. Then he decided he'd be Kato. Then he pulled out as Kato. While they were trying to find a director... the original villain, which was supposed to be played by Nicolas Cage, he pulled out of the production, and then it was replaced by Christoph Waltz. This film has had nothing but endless problems since it got started. This film, if you go back far enough, was supposed to be originally written and directed by Kevin Smith.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a Seth Rogen thing at all. And in fact, if you want to see Kevin Smith's version of Green Hornet, he turned it into a comic book, which you can get from, I think it's Dynamite Comics, released the, I think it's 10 or 12 issues or something like that, which would have been his Green Hornet. And I've read it, and that's great.
Mm.
That's the Green Hornet I wanted to see, you know? And I really wish I had actually gotten that, because that is, he's a hero, you know? And I would like to have seen Green Hornet be a hero, you know? So, I had problems with the film. As I said, I didn't hate it. It's got mildly amusing moments in it. It's got a couple of really nice fight scenes in it. Mm. But overall, it just leaves you kind of cold.
Yeah.
You just kind of walk out and go, that's not something I'm going to remember.
Yeah, no. I don't think I would suggest this to anyone based on the fact that I don't remember anything past individual scenes.
Like, and I will say, the best scene in the entire film is the opening scene.
Oh no, that and the sequence with the gas gun is.
Oh well, the gas gun is actually quite funny. But once again, they give away most of that in the trailer.
No, they
don't.
Don't
give away the gag though.
Yeah, the gag itself. Thing about it. The gag itself. The best part about that is in the actual film, and that is pretty awesome. But for a moment, let's just talk about the support cast, because the support cast deserves a bit of credit. Like, you had James Franco.
I was about to say, the opening scene with James Franco and Christoph Waltz is probably the best scene in the entire
film.
Exactly.
Two of the people that I think made what I loved about the film were Christoph.
And when that opening scene came on, I went, oh, we might be in for something here. This could actually work, you know? Yeah. And then it just kind of falls apart after that. And Christoph Waltz is another one that I wanted to say, because I actually mentioned this in my first thoughts. He's got all of the presence and stillness that he had in Inglourious Basterds. I love Christoph Waltz. The only problem I had with this film was he had none of the menace.
No, but I actually agree with Callison's. I actually liked, and I think it's put perfectly by him, he says, I like the chaotic, neutral personality. It's like he's not angry or outwards. He is just calculating. And I kind of like that, because it was like I didn't want him to have menace. The whole point is that he's not scary. The whole point is that he's trying to be scary. In some ways, he's trying to be a bit like, what's his name? The character from Kick-Ass, Red Mist. He's kind of trying to be like that. He's trying to make himself more menacing, because realistically, he's just a businessman that doesn't have any lines of conduct problem. He's just more than happy about that. So I don't know. I actually really liked this character because I thought he was trying to do something different. He didn't want to have that same feeling. He didn't want to be the same guy from Inglourious Basterds again, because that would just end up meaning he would be typecasted for the rest of his life.
That's true.
He tried to do something different, and I applaud him for it. I thought he was funny.
I look at it and go, I want to know what he's going to do next, quite frankly.
But like, I kind of like that he's shaken off that kind of Oscar-worthy kind of a frame now, because I mean, like, the worst thing that I find with actors is we kind of end up with that kind of Christian Bale situation where he does a couple of
movies. He also, let's face it, he also won the worst Oscar you could possibly, well, actually second worst Oscar you can possibly win.
Yeah.
Because actors who win Best Supporting Actress and Best Supporting Actor disappear.
Exactly, and I think he kind of knows that. And realistically, the problem is because everyone sits there staring him down in a film, trying to just pull apart his acting, and like, it doesn't, basically once you've won that award, people want you to win the next award up, and it's like you can't do anything. And I think by picking a film like this, he's shaken that, because it doesn't matter, like him or lump him, hate the film, like the film, he was in a role, he did a decent job, and that was it. You don't care about him as an actor. You just kind of went, yeah, okay, he did an alright job, and that's it.
That's a fair call.
And
that's a fair call.
By doing that, he's kind of restarted that career, because you start fresh. He's kind of cancelled one with the other.
So now we can get something better out of
him. And now we can just
see. And there's no expectation on him.
Exactly. And he doesn't have to play the same roles to get his credit or fame. He can play whatever he wants.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
And so I will be watching him closely, because I think it was a great pick as an actor for a next film.
Unfortunately, it was a really bad film.
It's a terrible film. But
as I say, look, I'm gonna round this up right now, because I'd rather spend more time on Black Swan. But I'm gonna just say, look, I didn't. We keep saying it's a terrible film. I didn't like the film much.
Yep.
I have to say, it's not a film that I'm going to walk away from and go, oh God, it was the worst thing I've ever seen. It was just nothing, you know?
No, dude, we've said it a million times on the show.
Mediocre is worse than bad.
And that's what it is. It is.
If you are curious about seeing this film at all, wait for DVD.
Yeah,
you
know? Or rent it from somewhere, or get it some other way like that, because there's no point in getting this at the cinema, because it's a waste of money. Because realistically, I'm with you, Dave. If I had paid for this film, I would have been angry.
Yeah, and I will say one more thing, though. If you are absolutely adamant that you want to go see this at the cinema because you just want to go see it, do not go see the 3D version.
And one more, my last thing about the support cast is, how awesome was it? Thank you, James from Melbourne, for reminding me. How awesome was it to see... Edward Furlong for like 10 seconds in the same role that we saw Lindsay Lohan in Machete. It was kind of like, hey, we need a drug addict. Who do we know that? Who's a friend of ours that's a drug addict? Hey, Edward.
You'll do.
And just throw him in. And the whole time, he just looks confused at what he's doing. He's just like, what?
Where's my hit, man? they probably promised him a bag of something in the other room. Just walk in there.
He's just waiting in front of the camera. He's like, oh, God, what do I have to do to get that?
The other one who I thought was absolutely extraordinary in this film was Edward James Olmos, who actually, I didn't know you could walk and talk while being asleep.
Yeah, no, he actually was asleep. I think 90% of the film, he just leaned back and kind of
he has a vague look on his face like, I have no idea why I'm here and I have no idea what's going on around me. You know?
That and that other thing in his face that just says, from Battlestar to this.
Yeah, what has happened? it's almost like he went, you guys promised me something else. What is this? Look, it's not a great film. If you are at all a skeptic of commercial cinema, this is not the film that is going to turn you around, so don't go see it.
Yeah.
So I'm talking to you, Geek Betty. Mm. All right. But yeah, if you are adamant you want to see it at the cinema, make sure you see the 2D version, not the 3D version. It's not worth the $3. And if you are adamant you want to see the film but you don't want to pay 3D, wait for DVD and rent it. It's so a rental.
Yeah.
Which is a shame because Michelle Gondry is actually a decent director. But I put it in my first thoughts, which is asking him to do Green Hornet has the same disaster written all over it that having Ang Lee direct Hulk did.
Mm.
He is a good director, wrong material.
Yeah.
You know, just wrong material all around. All right, let's finish this up. I'm not recommending it. Josh isn't recommending it. Let's move on. And let's talk a little bit about Entertainment Buzz. Now, there's a couple of stories, one in particular. Let's just bring up one. No, we'll bring up two. two that aren't in our show notes that we're just going to throw out here really quickly. First of all, the Scream 4 trailer. Josh and I talked about Scream 4 a couple of weeks ago. Finally, the official trailer has been released. Now, I don't have it for the show because it came out late last night, but it is up on geekactually.com. Go and check it out. The trailer does not help us, though. It doesn't help us work out whether it's a reinvention or whether it's just another sequel. It just looks like Scream. So I don't know. At this point, we still are in the dark. The other piece of news, which isn't in our show notes, but I thought we'd better bring this up very quickly, was because it only came out, like, I think 2 days ago, 3 days ago, which is Christopher Nolan, who is always very tight-lipped about everything, actually opened up and told us who the bad guys were going to be in The Dark Knight Rises, which I thought was very unlike Christopher Nolan to do. But he basically said that we already knew that Tom Hardy had been cast. Yeah. We now know that he is going to play Bane, which I think is very odd casting.
Well, look, the other thing is, I was actually just thinking about this about 5 minutes ago, dude. We know one thing about Christopher Nolan,
Sorry, I have to bring that up. Sorry, before we go any further, James from Melbourne in our chat room has said, yeah, and Cameron Diaz has aged like sushi in the sun.
Wow, that is a great line.
That is brutal.
Fantastic. Thank you, James. I am keeping that one.
Yeah, and she is not aging well, let me just say. And this is not a sexist thing where we say, oh, she always has to be beautiful. Just as growing as a character in the film, even, she's not growing as an actress in any way. She wasn't very good in Night and Day, and she's not very good in this either. Cameron Diaz, I'm over her, too. Yep. So there you go. I'm over Seth Rogen and Cameron Diaz. All right, back on to Tom Hardy.
I was thinking about this before. It's like we know for a fact that one of Nolan's big things is the fact of bringing realism to the Batman world. If you take Bane as a character, you can make him strong strong without necessarily bulking him to ridiculous proportions. Like if you just take a really big guy and put a mask on him.
That's not Tom Hardy.
No, but at the same time, Bane wears a mask.
That's true.
So you slap a mask on him and you change him as an actor. And
you do the old Lou Ferrigno trick, you reckon?
Yeah. I think that that's realistically what they could be going for.
Maybe.
And look, I mean, unlike you, I'm just going to throw this out there. I think Anne Hathaway is a horrible choice and a horrible actress.
That was the other piece of news was Anne Hathaway has been cast as Catwoman.
Yeah.
which I'm okay with, but Josh is not.
No, I don't like Anne Hathaway. It's like, it's nothing personal. She can hold her own in a film. It's just, I don't want her in the world because I don't feel she has, like, she doesn't have the cat-like sex coming off her. You know, she doesn't have the pheromones like Michelle.
Oh, Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah, look, but you know what I mean.
Like, yeah.
She just has a presence that just,
Michelle Pfeiffer was sex on legs. I mean, it was
but, like, not even, like, right down, it's in the eyes and it's in the face, whereas Anne Hathaway has kind of this scared, perched look in her face. She's attractive, but it's not that I'm going to seduce you look, it's that
James from Melbourne, again, is thrown back and says, you will never forget it's Anne Hathaway for the entire film.
I don't care.
No, what are you saying? He's saying,
oh, yeah, yeah,
won't be able to break into the character because you'll never forget
sorry,
that it's Anne Hathaway.
I'm very sick,
I actually disagree. I actually think that Anne Hathaway is capable. And I got to say, and this is where we disagree as well. When I first heard Heath Ledger was going to play Joker, I almost fell over backwards and said, are you kidding? What sort of casting is that? That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. And of course, how wrong could I have been?
Well, it's funny though, because this may end up being my turn to put my foot in my mouth, because I looked at it and said last time, I could look past it and just go, look, I trust Nolan. Like, I mean, I've seen every film he had done up to that point, and I was like, look, I don't know where this is going. Batman's dead, but I love this director and I will stick by him because I think that he has real promise. And look, it turned out perfectly. And, you know, I got to mock everyone I knew and go, ha, see, I was right. He could do it. This may be my turn to put my foot in my mouth. Yeah. Maybe he's seen something in her I haven't.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Look, Christopher Nolan is an extraordinary person for casting. Yeah. So we'll wait and see. It's still a ways off yet. Let's rearrange the order of these stories, considering that we're talking about casting and stuff anyway, and say that Ridley Scott, we all know that he was working on the Alien prequel. Interesting move happened over the course of this last week, which is that he has now decided that he's not doing the Alien prequel anymore. He's still doing it, but he's not doing it. Because, but what's happened is the screenwriter... who is Damon Lindelof, who of Lost fame, was writing the Alien prequel, and he basically came up with a better idea.
Oh.
And so they've now decided, and they've been greenlit. So Fox has already jumped on this and greenlit it. Noomi Rapace from The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo was already cast in the Alien prequel. She's still cast.
I'm cool with that.
And they're now saying that Angelina Jolie and Charlize Theron are circling in this thing. But Damon Lindelof has now basically come up with a script called Prometheus, which is a sci-fi film. It's still taking it back into sci-fi arena, and apparently it still has slight DNA shards of the Alien prequel. There has been talk that we'll still find out more about the space jockey and stuff like that, but it's no longer a direct prequel to Alien. It's now its own
story. Which I'm so much happier about.
Same here. When I heard this, I went, thank God cooler heads have prevailed.
I think though, realistically, we were kind of always heading down that path. There always felt like a level of unease about this whole project, like throughout the entire thing. Like everybody was trying really hard to get this to work, and everybody realistically had the same idea. It was like, we want to bring Alien back to the screen, we want to do it right, and we've kind of got to the point where there's so much lore, wouldn't you get to a stage in a series like this, you have to go back. Because if you don't go back, you've got so much to deal with going forward. And you've got this, and this happened, and when does that fit into the timeline? If you go back before that, you get a clean slate. You get a clean slate and start to restart the entire series.
Okay, well, we have a quote here from Ridley Scott. Ridley explained the outlines of the film and its genesis. He said, while Alien was indeed the jumping off point for this project, out of the creative process evolved a new grand mythology and universe in which this original story takes place. The keen fan will recognize strands of Alien's DNA, so to speak, but the ideas tackled in this film are unique, large, and provocative. I couldn't be more pleased to have found the singular tale I'd been searching for and finally returned to this genre that's so close to my heart. This will be his first science fiction film since Blade Runner. So it is pretty thing. So I'm so down with this now.
Yeah.
Now that we've finally gotten over it, it's like, yes. But I'm the most fascinating part of this entire story I find is the fact that 20th Century Fox pays you to go do a prequel to Alien. You go off with your writer and come back and buy, yeah, you know how you paid us to do this prequel to Alien? We got a better idea. Yeah. You know? And all I could think is, only Ridley Scott could get away with this.
Yeah,
this man has no fear of studios.
Yeah,
you know, so he just walks in and says, no, we're not doing that now. We're doing this. That's simple as that. There are three links in our show notes about this. This is all various articles about the Prometheus thing. Follow those links and have a look at those. He also has some stuff where he explains where the Prometheus title comes from and so forth. We won't bore you all with that now. The links are there in our show notes. Because I got to tell you, Smell-O-Vision is coming to the cinema.
Oh, man, we've joked, we laughed, we've put it on 1,000 different TV series.
Absolutely, but the funny thing is people seem to have forgotten that we've already had a film in Smell-O-Vision.
Yeah.
But let's just talk about this one really quickly and say that this year at CES, Sense Sciences released a bread loaf-sized product that appeals to your nose. Basically, movies will have been created with the scene editor software so that it puts out the various smells at various times throughout the film. This is the most stupid concept I've ever heard.
You know what? This is going to be awesome. Does this mean that we now get a home theater with 5.1.1? Is that what's going to happen? Maybe, like 7.1.1?
Maybe. You got to put, and cinemas need to be in sense around, if you remember that word, it rattles the sheets. Rattles the seats.
Yeah.
So we'll make it in sense around, 70mm, Smell-O-Rama 3D. There we go. We have actually forgotten.
That's the title for the show.
By the way, we have forgotten that a film did come out in Smell-O-Rama once before.
Yep.
Back in the early 1980s, John Waters produced a film called Polyester. And when you went to see this at the cinema, you were issued a scratch and sniff card.
Yeah.
And as the movie played out, a number would appear on the screen at scenes, and you were supposed to scratch the appropriate panel and smell what they were smelling on screen. It was a gimmick. It was stupid. And every panel smelled exactly the same. So I think the whole concept of this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. But you know what? Whatever floats people's boats. And are we going to get a choice, though, that you can see it in a non-smelly theater or a smelly theater is my question.
Yeah. And I'm with Arseface. It sounds like a lot of work.
Jason Millman has pointed out about Ridley Scott, but why he hasn't delivered too well lately. You know what? Yeah, Robin Hood is a good example. He hasn't produced very well lately. But Ridley Scott, even when he was starting out, was so high status that nobody could touch him. If you watch the documentary about the making of Blade Runner, this is a man who had had moderate success with his first film. Alien had been a real problem. He'd fought with the studios, gone over budget. To this day, nobody really accurately knows how much profit Alien actually made because nobody will actually talk about it. Yeah. And yet, while making Blade Runner, the studio would come on to set and say, you can't do this. And he'd say, yes, I can. Mm. And just fight them tooth and nail every step. The man has no fear of the studio system. He's not going to let some failures at the box office stop him from doing exactly what he wants to do. That's just Ridley Scott.
Yeah.
He's the English James Cameron. Yes, exactly. Full of vim and vigor and more self-confidence than is probably healthy. All right, let's move into our second feature film. Now, this is the film, we've had The Green Hornet, which was kind of like our first issue of the week where we went, oh dear. Then we went to see Black Swan on Thursday. Now, Black Swan is directed by Darren Aronofsky. His last film was The Wrestler. Mm-hmm. And written by Andres Hines and John McLaughlin. It stars Natalie Portman, who, if anybody's been watching TV, you'll know has just won the Golden Globe for Best Actress for this film. Mila Kunis, Barbara Hershey, Vincent Cassel, and Winona Ryder. This plot is complicated, and it's been summed up by IMDb, slightly modified by me, but it still doesn't do it justice. So it's a ballet dancer who wins the lead in Swan Lake and is perfect for the role of the delicate white swan, but slowly loses her mind as she becomes more and more obsessed with trying to perfect the black swan side of the role. That's the plot in a nutshell.
Yeah.
But there is so much more to this film.
Yeah.
And let's have a look at the trailer. This was one of the better trailers. There was a few trailers that came out for this film. We'll have a look at this trailer, and then we'll come back and we'll discuss this very interesting film.
I had the craziest dream last night about a girl who was turned into a swan. But her prince falls for the wrong girl, and she kills herself. He promised to feature me more this season.
Well, he should. You've been there long enough. And you're the most dedicated dancer in the company.
Our new swan queen, the exquisite Nina Sayers.
I'm Lily. You're gonna be amazing.
I watch the way she moves. Sensual. She's not faking it.
Seduces! Attack it! Attack it! Come on!
Where'd you get these?
It's nothing.
You sweet girl.
Feel my touch. Respond to it.
Someone's hot for teacher.
I don't want to talk about that.
You really need to relax.
It's the role, isn't it? It's all this pressure. I knew it'd be too much. I knew it.
What's she doing here? He made me your alternate.
The only person standing in your way is you. Nobody's after you.
Please believe me.
Sweet girl. Sweet girl. What happened to my sweet girl? She's gone!
Okay, so that was from the trailer of The Black Swan, or just Black Swan, I should say. Whew. we saw this two nights ago, and I actually haven't stopped thinking about this film. So,
me neither.
Look, it is a staggeringly well put together film. It will linger with you. It will make you think. And there are many, many interpretations of what the events on screen are actually unfolding to. I think it's fair to say that I was never a huge fan of Darren Aronofsky in the early part of his career. I actually, to this day, have still not been able to see all of Pi. Just can't get through it. Requiem for a Dream, I can acknowledge as being an amazingly well-made film with staggering performances.
Yeah.
But it is so unrelentingly depressing that I will just never watch this film again. And The Fountain was beautiful to look at, but completely incomprehensible.
Yeah.
And so I was not a huge Darren Aronofsky fan.
Yeah.
And then he did The Wrestler. And I remember seeing The Wrestler and thinking, wow, this is a really amazing film. Amazing performances, really clear storytelling. And I thought, wow, he's kind of come of age.
Mm.
So I was actually really looking forward to Black Swan because this is kind of like the follow-up to The Wrestler. So
it's all the aspects that kind of I love from a movie like this. I mean, you've got great actors. You've got a director that really knows how to sort of deepen sort of a film that has a very simple premise behind it. As much as I know he was joking, James from Albans said, it sounds a bit like Step Out 3D. I mean, Burlesque. I mean, Fame. I mean, you know, you can understand why people would say that if you just read that.
And we jokingly said when we first saw the trailer for this, when it first came out, we said, oh my God, Aronofsky's doing a ballet movie.
Yeah.
You know? But it's not about ballet.
Exactly. But at the same time, it really is. Like, when you're talking about the character's progression, I mean, you have a very staple kind of a personality that really does exist. Like, these are the way that a lot of these dancers are, with kind of a very strict background, usually via, the mother, well, who we will come back to
it's
later.
It becomes obsession.
Exactly.
The ballet, everything in the world of ballet is about obsession. It's about
perfection. Yeah, exactly. Like, ballet is about being perfect in every way and form. And it's really nice to see him kind of delve into the mind of that kind of a personality and really sort of Natalie Portman's character is beautiful in the fact that to her obsession starts the moment she gets the role.
Mm.
Like, that's
when she's already an edgy girl.
She's edgy.
She's already got this overbearing mother. Mm. She's obviously been sheltered her entire life. She is a nerve, a raw nerve ending. You can see it. I mean, she just looks like she could just explode at any moment.
Exactly.
And then it starts.
Yeah. Everyone around her at the start of the film is very much always talking to her in soft tones. It's very about the fact that we know that this person is someone that
that's
just
like she's made of porcelain.
Yeah, exactly. Leave her alone. Mm. She's just a bit weird. And as the film sort of progresses and obsession sort of drives her harder and harder, the film turns into a totally different kind of display. And it's just incredible. As a journey, it is just amazing to watch the places that it goes.
Now, I will straight off the bat, though, this is not a film for everyone. All right? Now, the reason why I'm going to say that is because this film delves into some really dark territory.
Oh, yeah.
And it is, as much it is a drama, as much as it is a film about obsession, it is also a horror film.
Yeah.
In many ways. Whoa. And it's not actually a horror film, but it is horrific in places because it is so dark. And there are actually moments that will make your skin crawl.
Yeah.
There are several moments, actually, that will make your skin crawl. There are also moments that will just make you cringe in your seat. Josh and I, at one point, looked at each other and was like, nah!
Yeah, the one moment just came back to me right then. There are moments that will just make you just squirm. Yeah.
So, a word of warning. It is not a film for everyone.
Yeah.
But if you are willing to take the ride, it is so worth it.
I literally felt like a weight was lifted. In the final moments of the film, when it reaches that crescendo, it's so great to see a film that just rides this twisting, turning level of intense emotion right to the end and finishes perfectly.
Mm.
Like, there is not a thing that you can pick wrong with that ending. It's just, it rides it and finishes it just the way you want it to finish. And I sort of walked out of there and we were all spellbound. There was that level. It
very much like The Wrestler, which is The Wrestler reaches an inevitable conclusion, which I won't spoil, but it reaches an inevitable conclusion where you go, it is the only way it could end.
Yeah.
It is sad, it is depressing, but it's the only way it can end, you know? And Black Swan is very much the same way. You kind of go, that's where it has to go.
Mm.
We've set the course. The rudder is set. The throttle is set.
Yeah.
We're going, and that's where we're going, and that's the only and to do anything else to it would have done the film a disservice
absolutely.
Completely.
Yeah.
So it is a really good film. Now, let's talk about Natalie Portman really quickly, because Natalie Portman, George Lucas tried to take her away from us.
Yeah.
All right. She showed such promise as a child actress in Beautiful Girls and in Leon and so forth, and she was probably the most amazing young actress at the time. Then, of course, she did the prequel trilogy. And although, you know, she's okay as Queen Amidala and so forth, there's no power or depth to these performances at all. He tried to take her away from us. And we have slowly seen Natalie Portman crawl back
yep.
to a status where we can go, yeah, this girl is an amazing actress. She was really good in Brothers. Mm. She was really good in Closer.
Yeah.
But this is a tour de force.
Yes.
This is where you sit.
This is the movie that I really honestly hope, like, she is in my top picks for that award.
Well, my pick is she will win the Oscar this year.
And she damn well deserves it. Like, I walked out of that and it's just everything that I have believed or known about that girl is changed. Like, she is just, in this film, she rides every aspect of her character so well. And there are so many levels to her as a personality. And when you see sort of like towards the end into the second act of the actual production, when she rides into that performance, it's a totally different person to the one that walks out off stage in the first one. And just to watch her switch between those characters is just amazing.
Yeah, and there's no doubt, this is her movie.
Yeah.
Mila Kunis is okay. I mean, she's basically
she walks in and out, she does what she has to do.
Vincent Castle is particularly sleazy as the dance teacher. Mm. Barbara Hershey is sufficiently creepy as the mother, as the overbearing mother.
And Winona Ryder was in and out of it, just like I wanted her to be.
Absolutely. And Winona Ryder kind of, you know, has a very small role. She's actually very effective in her small role.
Oh, yes.
Very effective.
Oh, there you go. There's my skin crawling again.
Yeah, me too. But this is Natalie Portman's film. She is in 90% of the screen time, without doubt. And her level of dedication to this role was phenomenal. She's lost a great deal of weight to be a ballet dancer.
Yeah.
I mean, you can just see skin and bone.
Yeah.
She trained for months to actually reteach herself ballet, because she was determined to not have dancing doubles.
And, you know, good for her, because it works so much better. And I have to say, in a lot of the other thing that I really loved about the film was how it shot. Darren Aronofsky, as you said, loves to get up close to people.
Really close.
And this film is all about that, especially because of the subject matter, because you're talking about someone that is so, you know, sort of perfect. And so she is in camera so much, like really close up shots and stuff like that. They work a lot with that. And that works so well for me. Like,
Darren Aronofsky really likes that kind of, it's not really cinema verite, but it's that kind of realistic style where it's a lot of it is handheld.
Yeah.
It's not, they're not pretty shots, which is what was so different about The Fountain, because The Fountain was so controlled and so pretty. Mm. But this is like The Wrestler. It feels like there's just somebody with a camera following people around.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of beautiful composition. Mm. It's, and Aronofsky really likes following the backs of people's heads.
Mm.
He will play out a scene for like 3 or 4 minutes where the person never turns around. You're just following them around, and it's the people reacting to them that you're seeing. It's almost like a first-person shooter, you know?
Yeah.
And he did that a lot in The Wrestler. I was saying the first 5 minutes or close, maybe even 10 minutes of The Wrestler, you don't see Randy's face at all. He literally follows the back of his head all the way through it, you know? And so and this is a very Aronofsky thing to do, but it's so effective because you kind of are uneased the whole time, because you're never quite sure where we're going to settle.
Yeah.
And that is a very effective tool, especially in something that has these horrific moments in it. And it works very well in the second half of the film, particularly because when Natalie Portman turns to look somewhere, you're expecting something to be there, because this camera is following her around. And when there isn't, you're going, it's this false sense of relaxing, because then, of course, it might be somewhere. It's just bizarre.
And the other thing that I love, though, is he doesn't take it too far into the horror aspect. One of my favorite scenes is in the trailer. You see the black swan in the makeup and the dress and all that sort of stuff, and it is used as a horror tool. And I love when she is breaking down towards the end half of the film, and she actually comes out past him, and he's just a normal guy. And I do like that. Because,
hey, how are you?
Yeah, it's almost a little sort of, you know, sort of calming moment for the crowd. They're like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, it's like, oh, he isn't just a figment of her imagination. Yeah. He's just a dude, you know? Yeah. It's like,
and I love that. I mean, I think it was, even though, the whole thing is, insanity is one of those situations where you're going to have a lot of erratic camera movement, you're going to have a lot of people kind of like that are there that aren't there, and so on and so forth. The thing that I loved about this film is you never feel like it lost control of itself. Like,
no,
everything is so calculated.
In fact, it's so calculated, in fact, that when you finally settle on a point where you go, okay, this moment is now real.
Yeah.
And then it turns out it's not.
Yeah.
And you sit there and go, oh, wait, now you're fucking with me. You know? Yeah. it's like just when you think you've got a handle on it, when you think you've got a grip on what she's doing, he turns it around on you again. But you stay with it the whole time.
Exactly. It never loses you. It keeps so controlled. And look, I mean, anyone that is a fan of cinema has to see this film. I just think this is one of those films. Like, The Wrestler is a film that, especially around this period of time, has a lot of buzz work and a lot of talk, and people will remember it. I think this film here, if it hits as hard as I want it to, could resound over our kind of generation. Mm. I just found it was... I can't wait to see it again. I can't wait to own it, and I can't wait to rewatch it over and over again.
That's my movie for tonight. I think I'm going to watch The Wrestler tonight.
Yeah.
I think it's about time I watch that again. I've seen The Wrestler a couple times, and I really liked it, but I'm in the mood for more Aronofsky at this point, so I think that might have to be the film for tonight. I highly recommend this to everybody, and I say that, yeah, with my little caveat before, which was it may not be for everybody's taste, I do recommend it, though. So if you can muster up the courage for this film, it is well worth it.
You will get every dollar that you spend.
I thought it was interesting. We were sitting behind this couple in the film, and at the end of the film, she heard us talking. She turned around, and she actually said something really intriguing, which was she didn't see the journey to insanity. She didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
And all I could think is, were you watching the same movie that I was watching?
Yeah, it's interesting because it becomes apparent quite soon in the film. And, you know, no disrespect to her.
Absolutely not.
But especially when the paintings start talking to her, I think at that moment it was kind of, look, if you had any doubt, it's like, that.
Yeah, and as you see in the trailer, when she starts to pull feathers out of her skin, you go, you know, it might be something, you know, slightly different.
The fact that it kept going on and off, I think, was the big thing for me. It's like the fact that it's not always there, or that it's not quite obvious that, like, when she does something and then it disappears, or we just move on from it, it's like, there's no way this could be real, you know?
Yeah.
And realistically, it's such a grounded movie. It's so real, you know? It couldn't have been supernatural. You know what I mean? It couldn't have been...
Well, and that's exactly the... I mean, when you watch the trailer, you suddenly start to question. You start to say, is this something really weird, ghostly, supernatural? Mm. No, it is insanity.
Yeah.
Now, I just want to quickly look up our friends over at Box Office Mojo, and let's see how good Black Swan... Because Black Swan, remember, opened in the States over a month ago. So let's actually have a look and see if Aronofsky has a bona fide hit on his hands. And now, in particular, considering that it's actually won the Golden Glove for Best Actress. Okay, so Black Swan cost $13 million to make. And in the U.S. domestic total alone, it's taken $77
million.
Yeah. it hadn't opened at the time of these numbers, hadn't opened internationally. So let's say it makes another $77 million internationally. Aronofsky's bona fide hit.
Win
all the way around. And as we know, Aronofsky's next film is going to be The Wolverine, which is the sequel to Wolverine.
Yeah.
But not the sequel.
What film?
but not the sequel, as it would be, because he said it's not going to fit within the canon of what he's doing. He said he's basing it completely on the 4-issue miniseries where Wolverine goes to Japan and fights the ninjas, and it's all very psychological. And all I can think is, this is a Wolverine I want to see.
Yeah.
This is the Wolverine I want to see.
Even I will come back for this one.
Absolutely. This is the Wolverine where we're going to get psychological, we're going to get into his head, and we're going to have some gore. You know?
That's going to be awesome.
Damn straight. So, let's this could be the Wolverine film that we wanted.
Yeah.
So, and once again, though, we run one risk with all of this, though, which is Aronofsky doing a Wolverine film. Are we heading into Ang Lee doing a Hulk film, or Michel Gondry doing a Green
because
Hornet film?
The difference being that...
he's picked the right character for himself.
Well, and also the subject matter is darker. And people that do the darker subject matter, you don't wreck something like this. If it goes dark, what do we possibly lose?
That's true.
Yeah, which is the only reason I'm still on board.
Okay, so in line with the Black Swan review... Oh, my chair is going... Remember last week my chair kept going? It just went again. There we go. In line with the Black Swan review, our list of five this week is going to be five films about insanity, which I thought when I you just casually throw these things out. I say, Josh, let's do a list about five films about insanity. He goes, yeah, I'm in. Cool. And then you sit down and you go, now, five films
my
about insanity.
My list wasn't hard, but the problem was I always, like, building a list, you know, I go off a lot of rules that me and friends, you know, sort of started, and there's particular things you have to do. I couldn't go with my usual style of building a list based entirely on the fact that none of these films, A, fall into these categories, and B, a lot of the best ones have come from a generation which has accepted the fact that this is a subject matter okay to really delve into. So a lot of my films aren't from older generation things. So I'm hoping...
I got a couple of oldies, not a lot. I got some honorary mentions as well. Took me a while to put this list together, actually, funnily enough. I sat there really kind of throwing stuff around. That's why I've got a couple honorary mentions, because a couple of things I kept putting in and then taking out and putting in and taking out, going, what the hell am I going to do with this? I also didn't want to be too formulaic, you know? But, in fact, probably my number one is probably as formulaic as they get. But anyway, let's try this out. What's your number five, Josh?
My number five is a very obvious choice, and I think anybody would probably use it as their main, the first one that would come to mind. But the fact that it's the first one that would come to mind for everyone is the reason that it gets a spot, because it is just quintessentially the perfect film about being insane and taking a comedic look at it, which is Fight Club. Fight Club is a brilliant film for just really taking you along that path and really being from their point of view.
No, I think Fight Club is a great choice. I think it's fantastic. I think that film really is all about schizophrenia, multiple personality. It's just brilliant. It's so, and it's so well handled.
Yes. Sorry, and the first spoilers time you watched it, and the first time you watched that film, and you get the twist,
you
it's
go,
like,
get fucked.
You're just like, what?
All right, my number five is actually a 1987 film directed by Martin Ritt called Nuts, starring Barbara Streisand. And it's actually a film all about a woman on trial to determine whether or not she is insane or can stand trial. And it is actually a really good film. It's I'm not a huge fan of Barbara Streisand, but it is actually a really good performance from her, basically trying to prove that she is sane. And basically other people are saying, we want to throw the trial, basically, and get you a plea of insanity. And she's saying, no, I am sane, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a really interesting film for that. It's also got a dramatic performance by Leslie Nielsen.
What?
And this is post-Flying High days, post-Airplane, but he's really sleazy in it. So it's a good film all around. Unfortunately, Martin Ritt died a few years ago, so it's a bit of a shame. But good film, good legacy to go out on. Your number four.
Number four is American Psycho. It was where Christian Bale grabbed my attention. I think his performance and, more importantly, the writing of the film is really what sells it. The way his life is just so incredibly bullet-pointed in everything he does. The fact that his character is so a child and a product of its generation.
I actually liked it better than the book, too, because I thought the book that came out in the 80s, which was a real statement of the 80s, was too much.
Yeah.
Whereas the film managed to bring it in.
It wavers on for way too long in some sections. I thought this was exactly what the whole idea of the thing was. It was cut, and it was incredibly visceral and to the point. And I think it's a brilliant film.
And it was an amazing turn for Christian Bale, because Christian Bale first got everybody's attention in the Spielberg film Empire of the Sun, where he played the kid, and then disappeared. He obviously went off and finished school and all this sort of stuff, and then came back as an adult in this film, and we all went, holy crap. Yeah. It's like, I was actually, I was very impressed with it. It was a film that was really misunderstood when it came out, because it didn't do very well.
No,
and it's become a cult film over the years. People have started to really appreciate it for what it is. My number four is actually a comedy directed in 1990 by Tony Bill and Barry L. Young called Crazy People, in 1980, starring Dudley Moore. Basically about an ad exec who loses his mind and is committed because he loses his mind because he believes that all advertising should be truthful.
Yeah.
And the ad company says, you're bonkers, and commits him. And then from the crazy house, basically enlists the help of all the insane people to write ads for him. And some of the ads are some of the funniest things in the film. Uneven film, but the ads are the star. It's things like the new movie, The Freak. This movie won't just scare you. It will fuck you up for life. and Metamucil. If you don't eat it, you won't be able to go to the toilet. You'll get cancer and die. And Porsche. Too small to get laid in, but when you get out. The ads are brilliant. The ads were the star of the film. And, of course, we've got every type of crazy person brought to our attention in this. Cute film.
Yeah. My number three is a very recent film, and I think I'm like one of the only people in the world that actually liked it. I thought Shutter Island was a brilliant trip.
I actually forgot all about Shutter Island.
Yeah, Shutter Island, you know, sort of like, I don't really know why everyone was so angry about it. I thought, look, yeah, there are parts of it that even I was like, come on. But realistically, his trip, and especially those last 5 minutes with them coming towards him to about to drill a hole in his head and basically make him a vegetable, and the fact that it still hasn't sunk in what happened.
And it's interesting, because when I saw Shutter Island, I gave it a moderate review on the show. Yeah. You liked it a lot more than I did, and I said, I liked it, but it wasn't for me one of Scorsese's best films. Mm. I have since seen it since, and I've actually appreciated it a lot more. Because once the hype machine has died down, and you get to see the film for what it is...
More importantly than that, Dave, you shake, after that first viewing of it, you shake that belief that you were going to see something that was mildly supernatural or horror-like.
Exactly, thank you.
If you watch it for what it was, which was a film, it was a thriller, and it never should have been classed as anything else, it's a fantastic film. Hmm. Like... I still think the ending is a little bit too explanatory. Like, when you go into the depths of it, you're like, wow, this
James from Melbourne has just come up with a great saying, and I'm going to use this saying from now on. James from Melbourne in our chat room has said, yeah, it does brew well.
Yep. No.
Some films brew well.
Exactly. Look, and I think it's an incredible film, and I think that if you take away that stigma of what you thought it was going to be and just go along like you would with Black Swan, because with Black Swan, it doesn't necessarily... You went into that, and I've kind of got used to the possibility of just ignoring trailers now, and that's what I did. I
think with all trailers, you take the trailer as, does it give you any kind of impact? But you really can't judge a trailer as the film, because trailers are cut for a very different reason. They're cut to get you in the cinema.
Yeah, Splice is another perfect example of this. There are films that will fail because the trailer sells it as something it's not,
absolutely.
And people will go into it believing it's going to be something different. But yeah,
cool. All right, my number three is Fight Club.
Yeah.
So I think Fight Club is a really good examination of craziness. Yeah. And it's not just the principal character and his hang-ups. Helena Bonham Carter is a nut job. Everybody in this film is delusional in some way.
Yeah.
So it is a really, really...
Bob has bitch tits.
Yeah, bitch tits is definitely a study in crazy from beginning to end in that film. So yeah, that's I won't go into it much because I think you summed it up quite nicely.
My number two is a film that, look, this, I will say one thing about this film. If you haven't seen it, don't expect amazing in every aspect, because the storytelling itself is a really straightforward telling of a film with one twist. You know, one of those sort of films. Mm-hmm. It's not that great, but performances and the way it's shot alone means that The Machinist, to me, is one of...
You know, I still haven't seen it.
Yeah, the great films for insanity, because it's like you'll ride along this character's journey.
I have got to watch that film.
It's one of those things that when you watch him with his gauntness and realistically the amount of real-life problems that go into something like that, every moment he's on screen is a real trial. And I just think watching it was one of those films where it was like, look, whatever happens in this film, I'll remember. Mm. And for that reason, it's very high on my list.
James from Melbourne says Bubba Hotep.
No. No.
All
good
right.
film, though.
Yeah, good film. My number two is a film from 1982. Now, this is an interesting one, because the question of sanity is actually whether or not people perceived her as insane.
Yeah.
And the film was actually called Frances. And it's about the true story of Frances Farmer. Now, this film was also an eye-opener because Jessica Lange previously had starred in King Kong. And we know how good she was in King Kong, right? And then she turned around and did Frances a few years later and won an Oscar for it. And her performance is amazing. And Frances Farmer was a Hollywood personality who was so over the top and loud and everything else that people didn't know any other way to deal with her except by saying, well, she must be crazy. And they ended up institutionalizing her and eventually lobotomizing her.
Yeah.
And it's a really interesting film about how society in itself may have made her crazy, even though she may not have started that way, you know? And it's an amazing film. It's a hard one to find now on DVD, but hopefully it will show up again. It is well worth seeing just to see Jessica Lange, where you sit there and go, oh, she can act. So, it was good, though. Your number one.
My number one is, and just for James from Melbourne, because he just adores me doing this, is a film that pretty much everyone has seen. It's one of those films that's probably the greatest, one of the greatest of its director's type. It's one of Celine's favorite films. Look, The Shining. It's
Shining,
just,
of course.
The Shining is the perfect telling of what can happen if you leave anyone alone for
too
long.
Isolation sickness.
Yeah, exactly. Isolation will drive you nuts, and there is no better nuts than...
Yeah, I actually forgot about The Shining, too. Isn't it interesting? It's the second one I forgot about.
Look, I mean, me and Celine have talked about this to great end. Mm. Look, I mean, I think Kubrick's greatest ability with that film is the fact that he took everything he could possibly do to make it really... the situation it was. Like, he took actors that didn't want to work together and were two very different grains of salt. You took a location that was, you know, still quite far from, you know, society. You took subject matter that was very dark. You took, you know, sort of scenes that would involve people maybe getting hurt if you weren't careful. And by doing all of that, it's the tension and horror.
Delta Knight, no, it's the one with Jack Nicholson and Shelley Duvall. It's the Stanley Kubrick one.
It's the Kubrick one, of course.
Yeah, he's saying, is it the other one or the new one with Rebecca De Mornay? No, not the new one.
No.
The new one's actually a miniseries for TV.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I didn't even factor that in. But yeah, no, look, the original film, it's like the insanity and the fear is real to a certain extent. Maybe not to the level that, you know, people would... you know, maybe like to believe, but realistically, the film itself has moments of terror because people are terrified. And Jack Nicholson is crazy.
He is crazy. James Melvin says, yeah, and then he destroyed it all with Eyes Wide Shut.
I've never seen it.
He was sick, all right? He died shortly after that film. Leave him alone. All right, my number one is an old classic. It's 1975's One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
I left it off because I knew it would be on yours.
Yeah, Nicholson again. This is a masterpiece of a film.
Yeah.
This is a film which has a guy pretending to be crazy to try and get out of jail time. And then, of course, like with Francis Farmer, basically being treated as crazy long enough that things can happen, you know, in that situation. It's something you don't play around with. That film, though, is made by a lot of its supporting actors who, for those who haven't seen the film in a long time, may have forgotten Christopher Lloyd, Danny DeVito. I mean, you know, it's got all these amazing character actors playing these small, crazy people roles. It's a really, really amazing film. A great performance by Jack Nicholson and Louise Fletcher, who I mentioned at the head of the show in Brainstorm. She won her Oscar. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is also one of only three films in history that has ever won the Grand Slam at the Oscars. We've talked about this before, where it actually won Best Director, Best Writer, Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Film.
Yeah.
The Grand Slam of the top five Oscars.
Yeah.
It happened one night with Clark Gable before it, and Silence of the Lambs after it have won that Grand Slam. So where about you, actually?
What?
Where about you? It's been about... 15 years or something since we've done it before. So I figure about another 5 years, we might see another Grand Slam come.
Arseface, it was almost on my list. 12 Monkeys is a fantastic film.
Oh, I thought about that one. That was one I toyed around
but
with.
But, like, it's one of those films where I didn't actually do it because technically he's not insane, so theoretically it wasn't going to fit on my list.
Yeah, but I actually wondered whether or not just for Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
You know, Brad Pitt was insane, let's face it.
Yep, and a fantastic...
and a fantastic performance from him.
I love showing people that don't watch many movies, the kind of person that only knows him for Legends of the Fall
exactly.
or his very attractive roles, and like, hey, look, he looks really weird in this.
I think that was actually the film where everybody turned around and went, wow, that's Brad Pitt.
Yep.
He got a lot of street cred for that. A couple of honorary mentions I want to throw out. These were ones that kind of came in and out of the list a lot. Mommy Dearest, 1981, with Faye Dunaway playing Joan Crawford. And Joan Crawford was a loo. So I thought that was one that could have been put in here. And then I thought, well, if we're talking about Joan Crawford, what about Whatever Happened to Baby Jane?
Yeah.
With Joan Crawford and Bette Davis, which is also about two loons. And, of course, Psycho, 1960.
Psycho almost went on my list. The only reason it didn't was because it was too obvious
That's exactly what I said in the end was, it's all in the title. You know, it's all just there. All right, so that's our list. We'll have those up on our Facebook fan page later today or tomorrow, and you can add to those if you want to. Let's do a few credits here, and then we'll get ourselves out of here. If you agree or disagree with anything we say or our takes on the films, you can send your feedback to feedback@geekactually.com or voicemail 02-801-13167 or Skype ID Geek Actually. Merchandise, fan pages, Twitter, our Tumblr accounts where we're doing movie watching. Excuse me. All of that junk can be found at geekactually.com. Just go there and you'll find all of it. If you want tech news or, you know, general geekiness, listen to our other podcast, of course, which is Geek Actually. Find it on iTunes or, of course, it's at geekactually.com. And remember, you can come and join our chat room and watch us live. We start the recording day at 12 p.m. Film Actually is usually about 1:30-ish, somewhere around there. And you can join our chat room, geekactually.com/live. All times are Australian Eastern Daylight Savings Time, UTC plus 11. Now, we also have some friends we like to talk about. WeekendRonan.com is the home of the Real Junkies. Yeah. Now, their podcast is like ours. They talk about movies, but they get drunk on tequila while doing it. I don't think they get drunk, but they drink tequila while they're doing it. They're a lot of fun, and they have a different opinion and perspective than we do. So it's always interesting to hear other people's perspectives.
They're always drunk. No, I'm just kidding, guys.
Just kidding. We also have our friends over at now this is kind of complicated. We also have our friends over at Movie Fan House, but they're kind of rebuilding right now, so we're going to
stop talking about.
So we're not going to do a huge plug on them for a while until they send me an email saying, "Okay, this is the plan," because at the moment they're restructuring. Okay, you have another show.
Oh, yeah.
I'll just finish yawning before I finish that. RawDLC.com is the website to go to live. Tuesdays, 8 p.m., we do a show, DLC Live. Come over and check us out. And don't forget, there is a magazine off Geek actually called Arbiter.
There should be a new issue out soon, shouldn't
there? There will be a new issue out. It will be a week later, as I am incredibly sick and cannot work on it this week.
And that is fair enough.
Yep, so it's going to be
a week late. What do people expect for nothing?
But, yes, we still haven't announced it, but there is a very cool thing going to be in that issue that we wouldn't usually get if we weren't awesome, and we are awesome, so you're lucky. But go back, check it out. It's further back in the posts. I think you can just type Arbiter in the search field, and you'll find it.
It's also got a category, so if you can do a category search, just do category Arbiter, you'll...
Wonderful. And the other thing is, don't forget to subscribe at the top of the site. Everyone that watches the show, please do, because we need more numbers so that we can get more cool stuff into the magazine.
Cool. And we also want to throw a quick shout out to our friend Rachel Atkinson over at the Funky Film Show at Radio Fremantle 107.9 FM, or you can listen to her at radiofremantle.com. You guys rock, and we've already talked about her because she gave us some feedback earlier in the show, so that's fantastic. Josh Spencer, we forgot to mention you in the Geek Actually show earlier today. He does our cartoons for our album art and so forth. Find his art over at attackninja.blogspot.com, and I think that's it. I think we've done everybody. Have we done everybody?
We've done everybody.
Okay, so for our audio listeners, you're going to hear as our sign-out music, we've got a little bit of music from the soundtrack to Black Swan. But in the meantime, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we'll see you all next week.
Bye.
Bye.